Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, Chris Tobin is here and Paul Schulens joins us. You know Paul. He's been on the show before, and this time he's got some great technology for remote control of your transmitter site. One site, 10 sites, or 1,000 sites. Plus, remote control of a telescope in the Arizona desert. We're actually going to look at nebulas. Isn't that weird? On this episode of Twirt.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, saving, and support. Online at bgs.cc. By the new Ruby console from Lavo. See Lavo in your future at lavo.com/twirt. And by the Telos Alliance, shaping the future of audio, inspiring you to create the most exciting and engaging audio experiences imaginable. Visit telosalliance.com/opt-in.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host. Delighted to be here. This is the show where we talk about radio technology, a lot of audio technology, RF technology, and so much digital technology these days, too. And if we got a great show for you today. We talk about everything from the microphone. It's creaky mic arm. You hear that? To the light bulb at the top of the tower and everything in between. This Week in Radio Tech, it's our 406th episode. So I'm Kirk Harnack. I work for the folks at the Telos Alliance. I'm wearing the uniform today because the studio that I'm in is actually at the Telos Alliance. And I'm going to do something a little unusual. It's always fun to, you know, to break protocol just a bit. I'm going to turn the camera around, and I am in the employee dining hall here at the Telos Alliance. There's Peter Passian. He's our man in Germany. He's saying hi. And we're having meetings up here at the Telos Alliance. So I just kind of took off from the meetings today and built a little studio, put the lights up. And so here we go. So that's where I am. We're going to have a great show there. Our guest is not a Telos employee, although sometimes we do that. Our guest, well, I'll tell you what, I'll keep it a secret for just a minute because I want to bring in our co-host. He's in his usual spot from an undisclosed studio in Newark, New Jersey. Chris Tobin, welcome in, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing very well. And it sounds like you're doing just as well. I'm just playing out a little toy. I just got my hands on recently. So.
Yep. Is that for show and tell later or what? Or during the show?
Well, I thought I'd do a quick, let's see if this works.
Sure. Yeah.
There we go. It's a SDR.
Oh.
It's Invisible Waves product. It's from a company called Kaltman Creations. Let's do it this way.
Invisible Waves.
There's the SMA connector. There's a serial connection and power. And it's a pretty cool box, little device. I'll do more demonstration with it next week when I have it all worked out. Just took receipt of it last day. Also has an upgrade where I can do 3.5 gig reception. 2.4 gig. Yep.
Yeah.
It's marketed for wireless monitoring, spectrum checking. Like you have a studio and you want to see if you have wireless mic frequency issues that you can avoid, or you want to license some stuff up. That's what you use this for.
Cool. It's pretty very cool. Nice. I'd like to see the results of that. We probably have. In fact, if you get to learn it and play with it and get some screen grabs or figure out a way that maybe you could share it live, we probably have an open date in about 3 weeks from now. So we could actually do a whole show about SDR. And you know what? We might want to bring in our good SDR friend, if he'll come on, Bob Holowenko from Canada. You know, he's been on the show before talking about the cheap SDRs, right? Or another possibility might be Alex Hartman. He's been on the show in the not-too-distant past, but Alex is really into SDRs as well, especially the new Lime SDR. One that that covers like 60 megahertz, a lot. Yeah. Or maybe more than that. Anyway, cool. Okay. I look forward to seeing and hearing about that. All right, Chris, our guest today is a gentleman who's been on before, but it's been a long time. I think he was on episode number 119 a long time ago. And I'm delighted to have him back on. It's our friend from the Northeast. It's Paul Schulens. Paul, welcome in. Where are you, buddy?
Hey, Kirk. How you doing? Great to be back. Show 406. I can't believe it. Wow. Congratulations. That's an amazing accomplishment. And I hope we get at least another 406 going here. It's really great. And it's a super service. I tune in as often as I can and learn a lot. So thanks for keeping up the great work.
Well, thank you. And I tell you, doing the show, and I don't know if I'm speaking for Chris, but certainly speaking for myself, doing the show every week just saves me a lot on medications. It really does. It's good therapy. I mean, look, I get to talk to Chris Tobin every week, and I love Chris. He's a great guy, and yeah, what a fine engineer. And then we have other engineers on, guests like you and a few experts from other fields. So I always learn a lot, and it's just great spending time with folks. Hey, just a real quick elevator speech preview, Paul. Our topics today are going to be including some amazing ideas in remote control, because there are some new vistas in remote control, or you know, new techniques in remote control, or I should say maybe new needs, like network operations center type remote control coming up. So you're going to be talking about that. We'll probably touch on astronomy, because that's pretty cool, and maybe about drones. So Paul, are you prepared to chat about all these things?
Oh, absolutely. Been looking forward to it all day. So I am coming to you from sunny and hot Littleton, Massachusetts, which is the home to Burke Technology and has been the home to Burke for a number of years. I joined Burke just about a year ago. So I traded the commute into Boston for the commute north on 495 over to this place. So it's a lot better commute. But more importantly, a very exciting job, shifting gears. Instead of taking care of radio stations, now we're making radio stations better by providing really, really cool stuff and learning a lot about the other end of the business, as some people call it. I made the transition over to the dark side, but it's been great.
Well, I got to tell our audience, when we come back in just a minute and start really talking to Paul and bringing Chris in too, I met Paul years ago, and the more I hear about Paul's accomplishment, it rings true with my experience, and that is whatever tech is new and useful and can be put to use to help engineers and disc jockeys, program directors, management do their job better, to make better radio and make better radio stations, Paul is typically at the cutting edge of putting that technology to use. And he's come up with some amazing ideas. He's actually tested some ideas that we've had at the Telos Alliance and made those technologies better with his suggestions. So Paul's that kind of guy that is out there on the frontier, the cutting edge, and then deciding, hey, is this helpful? Has this got any promise? Or maybe not. And so that's why I like talking to Paul, because he has always just great ideas. We're going to be back, talk to Paul Schulens and Chris Tobin here in just a minute. The first part of our show is brought to you by our friends at Lavo and their AOIP solutions. Let's hear from Lavo.
There has probably never been a better time in history to buy a new radio mixing console. Today's consoles are more sophisticated than ever, with more features and functions than you can shake a stick at. But have you noticed how complicated they are? There's a sea of knobs and switches and displays and buttons. Some of them look like you might need a pilot's license to do your show. Well, a board doesn't have to be complicated to be powerful. Just look at the new Ruby mixing surface from Lavo. The first thing you notice is how smooth and streamlined it is. Ruby has lots of cool tech, but what it doesn't have is that confusing ocean of buttons that clutter things up. Now, we all know that there are some console features the jock only uses once in a while. So why dedicate controls to them? Ruby fixes this problem by moving those once-in-a-blue-moon controls to a touch-sensitive, customizable GUI that happily shares screen space with your other studio software, helping you fight control room clutter. Thanks to this design innovation, talent that use Ruby produce smoother shows with less errors. Controls that are used the most fall naturally to hand, while functions that rarely need adjustment are easily controlled with just a couple of clicks in the context-sensitive GUI. And Ruby has cool features you won't find on other boards, like Auto Mix, an intelligent gain writing function that guarantees the perfect mix for multi-mic morning shows and call-in segments. Dual-mode snapshots that instantly switch the motorized faders between on-air and production modes, and enough DSP and I/O options to make even your pro sound pals green with envy. And because quality is as important to Lavo as it is to you, every console is proudly built to fanatically precise standards at Lavo's own factory in Germany. If you're ready to declutter your control room, do yourself a favor. Check out the new Ruby and the other cool Lavo radio tech at www.lavo.com/twert.
We really appreciate Lavo's sponsorship of the program. Encourage you to go to lavo.com/tort. It'll take you right to the page that has their radio products, and you can see more about the Ruby console. Hey there, I'm Kirk Harnack with you along at Tort number 406. Chris Tobin is here from his studio in Newark, New Jersey. And Chris, you know, on a few episodes in the last few months, we've talked about remote control. We had Chris Tarr on a little while ago, a few months ago, talking about SNMP. And I wanted to bring Paul Schulens in to talk about even wider topics than SNMP, all the ways to, that remote control is changing. And I was talking to Paul a little while ago, earlier today, and said, Paul, you know, the newest technology that I have at my old little small town radio stations is I still am using Sign Systems dial-up remote controls. And so we just call in for every few hours and, you know, check on the transmitters and the temperature. And of course we have them set to dial out if the temperature, you know, goes crazy or the power level goes out of bounds. So Chris, that's what we're talking about today. Sound like a good topic with Paul?
It's an excellent topic with Paul, especially since Berk products we all know and love. I mean, I've used them. I've used the other products as well, but the mainstay, it's like looking back at the old days of the RCAs and the Gates, you know, that line of products and Intraplex and not too far from where Paul is. Berk products are right up there. I mean, everyone knows what you get. It's like traveling abroad and you decide, do you want Berlin hamburgers or do you want McDonald's? Well, you're more familiar with McDonald's, you're going to go with it because you know what you're going to get. And Berk, I think, is the same way. That's my experience.
So, Paul, let's take a look at the big picture. In some ways, remote control has been changing. I guess a lot of that's due to consolidation, and maybe soon it'll be changing a bit more due to the lack of main studio rule that's come down. As I mentioned, I still have Sign Systems dial-up remote control, so we have to pick up the phone, make a phone call, punch in some numbers to take our meter readings, and be available on a phone somewhere or a bunch of phones if there's a problem and the sign calls out. That's getting pretty old-fashioned. What's happening these days in remote control? What's popular?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, you and I were talking yesterday about IP, and that's where everything is going, from audio to remote control to everything we do on a computer these days. So that's where, you know, the commercial remote controls are going. And, you know, with IP, that brings bidirectional control, which always didn't always exist in the past, right? We used to have, 950 megahertz STL links, which were unidirectional in their day. And now we've got bidirectional circuits that are ubiquitous. They're all over the place, and they give us a tremendous amount of power and flexibility. And the number of places that you can't get internet these days in the United States is really shrinking, the places that you can't get that kind of service. So that's great. These are all places that can be hooked up to your studio location or wherever you happen to be and give you tremendous power for remote control. And what Berk technology has done is really taken advantage of not only the IP technology, but some of the features that can really help you save money and keep an eye on what's going on with your facility. And unfortunately, a lot of engineers don't have the time to take advantage of a lot of these features. But the fact is the technology's out there, not maybe just with Berk, but with other providers too. And of course, I can speak a little bit about what Berk can do to help people get their, not only get their arms around their facility in terms of remote control, but to try and really help them run their facilities more efficiently and predict when things are going to fail. And that way they can order parts in advance, and that way they can actually prevent downtime. So we can touch on some of those things because there's some really clever technology behind all this computing power and IP connectivity for remote control systems.
So I'm a little bit curious about this notion of trends. And we talked about that with Chris Tarr a few months ago when we were really digging into SNMP. And I guess it's hard for me to imagine. I mean, yeah, conceptually, I can think of, okay, trending, that would be good. But trend sounds like it's a good measure of tubes, right? If the filament emission is falling off. And yet most of our transmitters, and many of them nowadays, are solid state. What kind of trends could I easily spot with a remote control that logged readings over time and showed me graphs versus the kind where I call up once a day, my disc jockey writes some numbers down, and we look and we make sure the numbers are somewhere where they're supposed to be. What benefit can I really get out of trends?
Yeah, and it's not so much just trends we're talking about here, but a new concept that we're marketing as something called predictive analytics. And what we do is we actually look at things like line pressure, for example. Transmission lines are normally pressurized with dry air or nitrogen in order to keep all the moisture out so that we don't get nasty arcs in there. And one of the things that we like to keep track of course, is how much air is in the line and does the line start to leak? Well, one of the things that we can do with some of the computer power that's built into remote controls such as the Burke line is some predictive analytics which allow us to look at what is normal for runtime for a dehydrator, say, or a nitrogen generator. And we can correlate that with environmental factors such as temperature outside, air pressure, and that kind of thing. So we develop a set of what normal operation is. And when we see deviations from that, we can take a look at that and say, hey, something's changing here. It's not normal. It's not the way it used to be. Maybe we don't have an alarm yet, and maybe we don't have our pressure loss, but something is different, and we ought to take a look at that. And when the engineer gets that kind of information, it's very helpful. And it's not just for line pressure, but we can do the same thing for a much more important or just as important parameter called VSWR, which is reflected power, which we don't want in a transmission system. And when we see some reflected power items, starting to creep up at a predictable rate, and it maybe it's snowing or icing out and you expect some of that kind of thing, but maybe it's not, and maybe this is going up over several weeks' time. There have been a lot of documented unfortunate issues where people haven't caught those kind of trends and have run into problems, costing hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, to repair. So looking at these kind of small changes over sometimes long periods of time can be a real lifesaver in terms of keeping you on the air and saving big bucks.
So Chris is there in the New York City area, and maybe you got some newer technology than I'm aware of. I thought I was heard you or someone talking about technology that lets you monitor your antenna better than just forward power, reflected power, and line pressure. Is there anything newer out there that I'm missing at this point?
Well, there are products out there to do that. I mean, I think Burke is working on something or has something that you can monitor if you're, say, a combined facility, right? You're a master antenna system, and your transmitter has one output and then feeds an input on filters and gets to duplex or diplex together with others. You have monitoring points at those locations you should be able to see and know what's going on. Because, your transmitter could be quite happy and everything's doing just fine, but cavities or the filters past where you are may be in trouble and the antenna system may not be performing where it's at and VSWR may be going up and your signal's being impacted and you have no idea that's going on because you're only at one portion of the path. And, Paul, correct me, but I believe you guys are working on something like that or already have you have that product. I can't think of the name of it. It was an NAP.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, Chris. Thanks for bringing that up. The new product name is being marketed. The new product is being marketed under the name of Arcturus, ARC because it's part of the ARC Plus system, and Arcturus because I'm into astronomy and it's about the fourth brightest object in the sky. So I really like the name. But Arcturus is aimed at multiplexed antenna systems, and Chris, you hit the nail right on the head there with what it does. We monitor a whole bunch of different parameters, but the leading parameter that we like to talk about is forward and reflected power, and we monitor that going into a combined multiplexed antenna system for either FM radio or TV. We're doing jobs on both of those types of transmission facilities, and some of these facilities get quite complex. And we actually monitor and interlock, antenna switches and patch panels. But the salient function is we open interlocks to the transmitter to remove RF and prevent damage to critical system components when the potential exists for damage due to something we sense like high reflected power. So we have a whole line of products now that are just aimed at these multiplex antenna systems, and there's a great market out there for that. Because you know, when these unfortunate incidents occur where there's damage because of something that's not caught, and a lot of these places don't have protection systems in place, unfortunately, that damage can be quite costly and time-consuming, and we've seen that way too much. So a lot of groups of stations that have consortiums are calling us and saying, hey, tell us more about your product. Can you really protect us, and does it make sense for us to put the Burk Arcturus system in? And we're getting a lot of interest in that, and it's pretty exciting stuff.
Paul, earlier we started to talk about how the whole landscape has changed with consolidation, of course, years ago, but even more so with the main studio rule going away. And it kind of even applies to a smaller operator like me. I've got 10 radio stations in Mississippi and Arkansas, and we're operating out of four different towns. But you know what? We sure would like to be able to look at all our transmitters from one place, that one of those places being the phone, and being able to see parameters there, at least the important ones, and digging deeper if that was appropriate, and then getting alarms maybe in better ways than just a phone call from a semi-mechanized voice. What I realize, big groups like iHeart, Cumulus, Entercom, Emmis, I'm sure they're probably well into this kind of thing. Where would a guy like me start in getting my transmitter sites connected to each other and getting meaningful readings back? And by the way, I've got 8 different brands of transmitters, so that's it. Not like two things are the same. I guess I've got 3 Nautels, and the rest are just whatever came with the station that we moved or horse traded, or something like that. Here, you can have half my barn if I can have that transmitter. Where do you suggest I start? I gotta believe I'm kind of typical for a lot of small, medium sized operators. Okay, we've kind of let this go. It's time to make this more convenient.
Sure. Well, you've touched on network operation centers, and you talked about some of the bigger groups that we're getting a lot of interest from these days in terms of, hey, can you bring all this stuff together? And some groups have already done this. I know of several large TV groups that have huge network operation centers for dozens, if not hundreds, of TV stations across the country. They have a centralized location where they use Burk equipment to monitor all their transmitter sites, and that's becoming popular in radio as well. But in terms of the smaller situations where you may only have a half a dozen stations, that's still something that is very easy to do. I know with our equipment, as long as you have IP connectivity, it's really something that's built into the Burk technology world, where you can put in the IP address of where your Burk equipment is located on one equipment. One computer, rather, and have a display, a single display, either a web page or a display on your PC that will bring together all these sites, even if they're geographically diverse. It really doesn't matter where the sites are, as long as you have the IP connectivity. And interesting, this is where I became a real Burk fan when I was working for Greater Media. We put all those stations together in one building. We had 5 radio stations, 5 FM stations, and we had 3 or 4 sites, and I wanted to make sure that we could control all the sites from all the remote control points we had. And when the old remote control equipment that we had, I think it was the Mosley 1620s, became obsolete, we decided we had to move into the future. And so I called up Peter Burk and I said, we've got some challenges here, and I wonder if you can help us. And it turns out the kind of challenges I had were a little bit cutting edge for Burk, because they weren't doing exactly what I wanted to do. But God bless him, he put together a system that worked for us. We were able to have all our radio stations talk to, in other words, We had one transmitter site that could talk to six or eight different screens at once, and that's something that Burke hadn't done before. And to do that, it required kind of retooling some of the hardware, the Arc Plus touches and stuff like that. So that's where I kind of really got into it, was when I was with Greater Media, and we put together, you know, redundant computers in all the studios that could look at all the radio stations. And, you know, I had stuff in my office and master control and at home and wherever we needed to connect with IP. So that's a long answer to your question, I guess. But the Burke stuff I can speak for, of course, would work well in a situation like that where you've only got a half a dozen stations to put together. And this idea of centralized I.O., or decentralized I.O., I should say, is really good, too, because you can buy specific components to put in the devices you're going to control. So, for example, if you have a translator somewhere that you only need, like, on-off and power, you don't have to buy a whole remote control for that. You can buy a component, stick it in there. As long as it's got IP connectivity, you're into your whole network operation center, and you can see that translator, and your investment in that piece of equipment is a fraction of what a remote control would cost. So that's what we call distributed I.O., and it's the coming thing, I think.
Yeah, I sure like the idea of running an Ethernet cable, say, out to my generator outside, if that's where you know, its controls are or its monitoring is for, you know, temperature or fluid levels or whatever. Or other battery status, that kind of thing. So is that what you mean by distributed I.O., that you can put a box out at distance to make some measurements?
Yeah, that's right, exactly. So we're talking about one cable, like an Ethernet cable going out, and this distributed I.O. may have a half a dozen inputs and outputs, relays, you know, statuses and analog readings, or it may be more complex than that. It may be a unit that has 16 inputs, 16 relay contacts, and 16 analog. It all depends on what you need at that particular location. So that's what makes it kind of efficient, where you can just buy the piece that you need, stick it at the location that you need it at, and run an Ethernet to it, wired or wireless. I mean, there are cellular ways of, you know, getting the data back. Any way you can get that IP data back to the home ship, so to speak, will work just fine. In fact, Burke has developed, a lot of very efficient ways of using the data from these distributed I.O. devices, so that if you're on satellite, for example, you don't have to worry so much about the bandwidth you're using because of a lot of efficient options you have in terms of protocol and the way the data is sent back and forth. So, he's really solved a lot of interesting problems by using IP to the best of our ability.
Paul, with as popular I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chris.
Kirk, I was going to say, to answer your question, what I'm doing is I have an Arc Plus at the transmitter site, and I'm using my Intraplex T1s. Intraplex, that's a place somewhere in Massachusetts at one time in life. Never mind marketing. And I have an off-site transmitter site, backup site, where I have a Plus X300? Is that the proper term?
Yep.
So
yep.
It's the I.O. relay box, status and relays, plugged into my network on my Intraplex, as well as a failover for another broadband connection. And from my main location, using the application right here on the phone, I can turn on my AUX site with that one box. I don't have a Burke AUX Plus chassis or anything like that. I just literally have an Ethernet connection coming out of a switch into the X300, and it's wired into my transmitter. Status, relay control, the whole bit, and room temperature on that. And that's one of the distributed capabilities of the Burke platform. That's what I was talking about earlier. You know what you're going to get, and that's what I'm doing. And it makes it easier for the barrier to entry is lower because I've invested in my Burke Arc Plus, right? Everybody has one of those, or Arc Plus Control, and all the variations of it. But then I have some off-site stuff. Wow, do I want to spend all that for a small translator or off-site location? You could use a distributed approach and still get the same results.
So and thanks for that question, Chris. I think I'm getting a better idea of this distributed idea. How about, you know, webcams and security cams are so popular nowadays. One reason is they're so cheap. can I incorporate a webcam view of a transmitter room into some kind of a Burk dashboard display?
Sure. That's done all the time, Kirk. In fact, we had a pretty cool and interesting display at NAB. I don't know if many of the viewers have had a chance to go by NAB this year and stop into the Burk booth. But we did kind of a new display with an octagon, and we had a whole bunch of custom views from some of our customers out there that were pretty impressive. And many of those custom views had webcams attached to them. So, you know, you're there in Las Vegas and you're looking at live transmitter pictures from, you know, Minneapolis where there's snow, and you're seeing the outside of somebody's transmitter shack. So that all can be included into what we call the custom view, which is something that the customer can design and make the screen look any way he or she wants to make it look, in terms of arranging the meters and putting content on there like webcams. And you can even put weather radar on or any web page you want. So it doesn't even necessarily need to be relegated to remote control stuff. You could have a web page that has nothing to do with technical stuff, but if it's in the studio, you know, and it's your remote control screen, so to speak, you could put lottery numbers on there if it's a web page that displayed those or whatever. So it turns, you know, it makes better use of the real estate, because we all know that in studios nowadays, real estate is tough, especially screen real estate. So, you know, you can do that with the Burk stuff as well.
Lottery numbers and remote control reminds me of, hey, we're going to we have the office pool going on. Is will the afternoon jock overmodulate the transmitter today or not? So, yeah. Hey, I want to remind our listeners, viewers, that you're listening to or watching This Week in Radio Tech, episode 406. Chris Tobin is along, and Paul Schulens is our guest today. We're talking about remote control, and I've got a couple more remote control questions coming up right after our next message. And Paul, I'm going to want to touch on SNMP. We've talked about that before, and I just want to understand how. I mean, I've never had a remote control that talked SNMP, so I want you to introduce me to or assure me that works, or tell me that it's coming, or whatever. Just I'd like to know about that. And you know, some transmitters nowadays have really sophisticated displays on their own. I'm thinking of Nautel and maybe Gates Air that give you some pretty sophisticated information. How can a remote control like a Burk, can it use any of that information? So we're going to talk about that coming up. And then we're also going to talk a little bit of astronomy and probably a little bit of drone talk too. We're going to always try to tie it back to broadcast engineering, but you know, we'll see how that goes. Our show This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by my friends at the Telos Alliance. And one hot topic this week with our meetings here at Telos has been the Omnia Volt. Let's hear about it right now.
More top radio stations choose Omnia than all other competing processors combined. Now meet the Omnia Volt, sharing lineage with Omnia processors like the Omnia 11, electrifying, competitive, market-leading audio in a compact one-rack unit package. With Omnia Heritage built in, the Omnia Volt includes Dynamics Magic from Omnia chief algorithm designer Cornelius Gould, including six AGC sections from start to finish, deep bass, warmth, and stereo enhancers, 5-band time-aligned limiter, the world's best presets to get you started right, and spectrally pristine final processing designed by Frank Foti. OmniaVolt users love its Quick Tweak feature. Quick Tweak distills years of processing knowledge and proven approaches into simple controls that turn you into a processing pro. Nail your signature sound in minutes using advanced presets or your own settings right from the Volt's front panel or a PC. OmniaVolt brings charisma to your station's audio. FM translators and low-power FM stand out among the crowd. AM stations maximize clarity and coverage. Digital broadcasts sound clear and musical without fatiguing artifacts. Smart design, clearly visible outside and inside. Input and output connections in analog, AES-3, Livewire, and multiplex for FM. Automatic input selection handles redundant STLs.
remote control works with today's browsers, tablets, and smartphones. Idealized patch point for external watermarking. And hardened construction to withstand lightning strikes, surges, high RF fields, and harsh conditions.
The new Omnia Volt is stunning. Everyone will know you've got an Omnia on your station.
Omnia Volt is versatile too. DSP Core firmware alters the personality of Volt to fit your changing needs. FM, AM, digital transmission, or studio processing. Volt can even be used as a standalone stereo generator. DSP cores aren't extra cost add-ons. Download the functionality you need for free. The Omnia Volt. Omnia audio processing for any station. And a smart upgrade for aspiring broadcasters. Proven audio processing that'll leave your competitors in the dust.
That's an amazing little processor right there, I'll tell you. The OmniaVolt from my friends at the Telos Alliance. Check it out today. It is super duper affordable from any of your favorite Omnia dealers anywhere around the world. All right, we are on This Week in Radio Tech, episode 406. Chris Tobin's along here, and Paul Schulens is too. And we're going to talk just for a few minutes about SNMP, Simple Network Management Protocol, and that's how a number of devices nowadays are. You can check the health and even do some control about that. Paul, educate us a little bit on SNMP and inclusion in BERC equipment.
Sure. SNMP is something that BERC embraced early on, and a lot of our customers are using it already. SNMP allows you to get so much information out of these peripherals, such as a transmitter or even a copy machine, a printer, a UPS. It's not relegated just to the broadcast industry, but SNMP is a standard that's used worldwide for all kinds of different pieces of hardware. And we can ingest that in our remote controls. And the advantage there, of course, is there are, you know, you alluded to some of the more sophisticated displays on some of the newer transmitters like the Nautels and the Gates Air, for example. And you can't really get all that from running wires to the transmitter for parallel wires for, you know, every single type of parameter. They're just not available. But today, with SNMP, some of these forward-thinking manufacturers, along with the technology that BERC has, makes all that information available through SNMP and an Ethernet cable. And basically, it's a little bit of a chore to set up, but once you've got it set up, you can literally have access to hundreds of parameters from, say, a transmitter, and you can actually control the transmitter as well. And it doesn't matter if that transmitter is 10 feet away or across the globe, because it's an IP connectivity type thing. So there's a lot of technical things that I don't think I should get into on this show about SNMP, but BERC makes it pretty easy. There are published what they call MIBs that you take advantage of, and you program the remote control to take the data from, say, a UPS or an advanced transmitter like a Gates Air or a Nautel, for example. And you can map these to all sorts of different channels in the BERC Plus X ecosystem. So you can display it on a meter, you can display it numerically, you can act on parameters that get out of tolerance, and do a lot more than you could just by running individual parallel wires to the transmitter. So it's not just unique to BERC, and certainly not to broadcast, but it's the way the world is going. And we had a lot of fun at the NAB show demonstrating how many different devices that we could, you know, gather up and put into a rack. And then we had a bunch of custom views that showed all these parameters, not with parallel wires connected to the peripheral devices, but with SNMP, Ethernet. And we had a lot of interest in that. And it was just meant to show that SNMP is here. It's the next greatest thing. And a lot of people are taking advantage of it. And our company is embracing it.
You know, SNMP had been just a real mystery to me. And I had several failed attempts at playing with it until Madison, Wisconsin, the Broadcasters Clinic last year, when Tony Peterly did one of these evening classes on SNMP, and he actually walked everybody in the room through some success with SNMP. Now, I got to say, it's still it's a steep hill to climb, steep hill to well, once you've done a few of them, you get the idea of how this stuff works. Chris, have you had some experience with SNMP yourself here, and are you using it for anything?
Yeah, I'm using it. Actually, I'm using it all over the transmitter site. Hang on. Yeah, no, I'm using the Berg product for that, the SNMP there. We've got a couple of servers here in the studios where SNMP is running rampant. I will say I'll agree with Paul, their approach. SNMP can very easily get you into trouble, or your brain will just freeze or explode, depending on your choice. Charlie Toner up north, way up north, will tell you the same thing. He did some SNMP seminars at a convention, a conference 2 years ago up in Toronto, and it was fascinating the things you can and what you can do to the point where it gets just crazy. The MIBS, as Paul mentioned, can go from, say, seven vital information points, data points, to several thousand data points. And trust me, you don't need the thousands as much as you might think.
We can monitor everything. Yeah, but do you want to monitor everything?
I took a look at the Nortel MIB, and I had some fun looking at breaking it out, just looking to see what I can monitor. And, you know, it's interesting, the amount of components inside a Nortel transmitter you can be looking at, voltages, current, speed of things, and go, really? Because if that fails, I'm pretty sure the other device ahead of it would give me an alert. You know, I don't need that one. I'm going to stick with this data point. But it was just fun to be able to see what you can do. And it's
Paul,
it's
what are your
healthy look at it.
Paul, what are your thoughts on a great big MIB of 7,000 data points?
I think it's a necessary evil. You know, the problem is there are so many different manufacturers of peripheral equipment that take advantage of SNMP. Even though there is a kind of standard, nobody's trying to really make it all that easy. At least the individual manufacturers aren't. And there is a little bit of sifting, you know, as Chris alluded to, that you have to do through the MIBS and understand how the tree works before. And you just need to, like, find those items that you're looking for. And, you know, as Chris said, there may be hundreds or even thousands of parameters that the manufacturers make available. And you may only be interested in a dozen of them. So the trick is to find those on the tree and to map those properly. What Berk has done, though, we have a couple of products called PlusX Connect that are designed to work with specific transmitters, namely the Nautels and the Gates Air. And those do a great job of making it really easy, super easy to take advantage of SNMP with those specific transmitters. So at least for broadcast, we're trying to make it as easy as possible. But when you get into stuff like UPSs, you know, copy machines, sometimes modulation monitors, those kind of things, especially stuff that's not, you know, geared toward broadcast necessarily, but, you know, and again, UPS is a good example of that. You do need to do a little bit of upfront work to find out what the parameters are that you're really interested in monitoring. But once you got it, it's there, and you know, it's well worth having.
You mentioned this PlusX Connect. Is that a piece of hardware or software? What does that look like?
Yeah, that's a piece of hardware. It's an interface that goes between the transmitters and the PlusX network. So it's an Ethernet device. And like I say, it's made for a variety of different transmitters. And the customer buys it, puts it in, and gets all kinds of different parameters from the transmitter. And the connection to the transmitter is very simple as well. It's not like you're running a hundred different parallel wires. You're taking advantage of the SNMP technology from the transmitter. So so that works out really, really great.
So this sounds like an SNMP translator to that is aware of the MIB of the transmitter involved and what translates that into the protocols that the Berk system understands, yeah?
Right. It makes it really easy for the customer to implement SNMP for specific transmitters. And this came out a while ago, I think, before my time here at Berk. It was a product, and it is still relevant today. But you know, SNMP has become more available and popular. So it's not just, you know, SNMP that's relegated to those specific transmitters that the PlusX Connect is made for. Anything that puts out SNMP, of course, can get mapped to the Berk ecosystem.
Chris, you have any last thoughts on remote control, because before our time runs out today, and it always runs short toward the end, I want to talk with Paul about astronomy and maybe a little bit about drones as well. So any more remote control things, Chris, you want to comment on?
The only thing I will add for the remote controls, for those of us out there doing that kind of work, keep it simple, okay? Do not become enamored with the ability to do all kinds of crazy things with your smart device and, you know, get out of hand. I have met some folks that pride themselves, and, you know, God bless them for doing it, pride themselves on the ability to control every parameter at the transmitter facility, from the door opening to door closing, windows, you name it, the whole bit. But I always say, here's what's going to happen. You're off the air. An emergency is occurring. You've got to think fast. You've got to be able to access data quickly. Can you do it from the smartphone for the screen without changing pages? Okay? Just keep that in mind. You've got to be quick about it. You got to make sure you're smart about it, because if you hit the wrong sequence of events, what happens? Go off the air even deeper. So,
whoops.
Just keep it simple. Just make it work for you. You don't work for it, and you'll be in great shape. And I will say, from personal experience over the years, from my Microdynamics 8, the old stuff, to the Berks in the middle to now, that product has given me the ability to, you know, sleep nights, sleep weekends, know exactly where things stand, and not have an issue because I kept it simple. I could be real complicated with it. I've chose not to. But it doesn't have to be Berk. You can have the other products that are on the market as well. You can keep simple but still have, you know, full functionality. So that's my two cents. Just keep it simple but enjoy your, you know, enjoy what you have.
So at the end of the show, we'll see if we can get Paul to give us, you know, some tip of the week. Maybe, you know, place to contact, a pamphlet to read. Maybe you got some information. So Paul, be thinking about what you can give as a tip after our last commercial announcement. Right now, though, Paul, I think maybe if our producer Suncast has some pictures ready, and I didn't get confirmation that he does. I don't know if he does or not, but if we could just talk over some pictures, I'm sure you can tell a lot of story about them as they pop up. So Suncast, do you have a picture or pictures available for us? There we go. Well, tell you what, Paul knows astronomy, and he's got some amazing, he's got an amazing telescope out in the Arizona desert, plus his own equipment where he lives in the Northeast. And so Paul, I'm sorry, these are out of order, but just tell us a story as we move along here. And I want to, are you controlling the remote telescope with a Berk or something else?
No, to answer your question, no, it's not Berk, although I wish it was. I developed this remote control for the telescope a long time ago before I worked at Berk and did my own homebrew type deal for it. But
of course you did.
No, it's a lot of fun. So anyway, I had, you know, the great opportunity last August, I think it was the 19th, to witness the total solar eclipse. And I know it went through Nashville. Did you get to see it, Kurt?
Yeah, I did. We had a party at my sister's house. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. I think you told me about that. And I'll tell you, it was the first total solar eclipse I have seen, and I wanted to do it at least once in my life. I traveled up to Casper, Wyoming, where I was sweating out the weather, but the weather held out. And I wasn't even going to bring my camera because I figured this was the first time I'd see an eclipse. I don't want to be, you know, saddled with, like, looking in the viewfinder and taking all kinds of pictures. But, of course, I brought my camera, and I'm glad I did, because this picture that you see here is totality. And I used a little telescope and a filter. And, man, I'll tell you, if you've ever seen one of these things, it's quite a spectacle. I would highly recommend it if you can. There's another one coming up in about 7 years, and it's going to go through. I think it's going through Nashville again, or somewhere
what?
Close to you, Kirk.
Okay.
Maybe not Nashville, but the center of the country it crisscrosses.
Right.
And it's coming up our way to the Northeast. So I'm looking forward to it. But just amazing. I understand now why some people chase these crazy things all over the world. It was really neat. It got dark out. All the animals started making weird noises.
Yeah.
It was a 360-degree sunset. You look all around and you see, you know, the red sky. It was really cool.
Right.
So won't soon forget that one.
And it did get cool, too. And as you as it traveled across the U.S., because the temperature got cool in many areas, if there were clouds, they dissipated a bit during
That's
that
right.
time. Yeah. So a lot of folks.
South Carolina.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. A friend of mine was in South Carolina, and it was cloudy. And then you're right. The clouds dissipated right at the time when the eclipse started because of the changes in temperature. And he got to see it. So that was really cool.
So let's see another picture here. Oh, what? Wow. The moon.
Well, talk about eclipses. This is the other kind, right? This is a total lunar eclipse that was taken 3 or 4 years ago. And what I like about this one is the fact that you can see all the stars around the moon. And normally you don't see stars around the moon because of the glare of the moon. So only when it's eclipsed like this can you get something really cool where you can actually see what's going on and see those stars show up right around the surface of the moon.
Wow. What's next? Suncast, you probably have some more pictures to. Oh, now this one came out sideways. I'm not sure why.
Okay. All right. Well, this was taken in my basement. Sorry about that. But this is my portable setup. It is a refractor telescope with a digital SLR camera on the back end. And that telescope is a computer. And it's got Wi-Fi on it. And I sit there with my laptop 10 or 15 feet away, untethered, and I control the whole thing. And this is what I bring up to dark places like in New Hampshire. And I sit there and, track the sky and take pictures with my digital SLR camera. I call this the portable setup, which I use a lot this time of year, especially because the other setup, which you'll see in a minute, which is in Arizona, is kind of useless in the summer because of the monsoon season and the high temperatures out there. So being up here in New England, I use the portable. So this is a photograph of the telescope that I have out in Arizona. The blue you see in the background is the interior of the dome. It's a building. It's a 10-foot diameter dome. And it's all remote controlled from wherever I happen to be. And in this case, it's Massachusetts. And there's a great exterior picture. This is in the middle of nowhere. It's about 2 hours east of Las Vegas. And there's hardly any water there. There's barely internet. There is electricity, though. It gets very, very dark there. And the conditions are clear skies most of the time. So it's a lot of fun. Every clear night, except for the monsoon season, I've got it open. And my hobby is taking pictures of deep sky objects. And then I FTP those data files to me here in Massachusetts. And I turn it into stuff like this. This is a picture of the Ring Nebula that I took. Actually, this one was taken with the portable setup. But again, this is many thousands of light years away. And the photons that hit my camera to make this image actually originated from the object hundreds and hundreds of years ago. So the object may not even be in existence today. So that's kind of mind-blowing and cool at the same time, where you're picturing, you're capturing all this energy in terms of photons that started out so long ago. This is an easy one. This is a very bright one. This is called the Orion Nebula on the right and the Running Man Nebula on the left. And I took this with the portable setup. It's actually a huge object. And if you look at the constellation of Orion with your naked eye on a clear night, you can actually see the nebula with your naked eye. You can't see the color because it's not bright enough with your naked eye, but you can see something that looks different than a star. It looks like a smudge in the sky. And this is what I took a picture of.
Wow. Wow. Oh, my gosh.
And this is something called the Crab Nebula, and it's a false color image using filters, what we call narrowband filters. And certain wavelengths of hydrogen gas are emitted from this object. And instead of taking a picture with a regular camera, I took a picture with special filters that are narrowband, ones for oxygen, ones for sulfur, and the others for hydrogen. And then when you get all these images together, you combine them, and each color represents a different element of emission from the object. So you can see different structures in the element by using these filters.
Wow. Wow. That's nice.
So it's a lot of fun.
Suncast, if you could pop back to our cameras for a sec, we'll get to this in just a minute. So there's a technology question that I have for you, Paul, because those pictures that you were just showing us of these different nebula, those are lengthy exposures, are they not?
They are, yeah. And in some cases, they're stacked images where I would take 10 or 20 or even 100 pictures and with software stack them on top of each other for better signal to noise so they're not as grainy.
Okay, so when you set up your telescope to track, because if you just open the lens and the telescope stayed still, you'd have streaks across your picture, right? If you just kept the aperture.
That's
open.
Right. Yeah.
So tell me about this tracking. How does that work? It's got to be so incredibly accurate. Now I realize the Earth spins in a pretty predictable way, but how do you actually make that work on good old Mother Earth and pointing in the sky so you're pointing in the same place for a little while?
Yeah, and it's not always easy, Kirk, because as you know, we're magnifying these things at 1,000, hundreds of times, and any little excursion, like you say, will blur the image. So what I have is something called a guide telescope that locks onto what we call a guide star, and it keeps that star centered by sending small corrections multiple times per second to the mount that's actually tracking the object that I want to photograph. And then I monitor that to make sure that the tracking is occurring, like it should. And it doesn't always work. It works about 70-80% of the time usually. So we get a bunch of bad exposures, but it's really fun because you see these little corrections being sent back to the mount. You don't see them, but you can see them on the graph anyway. But they're very minute, corrections that you'll never see the scope moving for, but it's working because it's keeping that guide star centered within like a pixel or so. And then a 10 or 15 or even 20 minute exposure is perfectly sharp because you get the stars that are round and you get the object well-defined like you want it. So that's a really cool technology that astrophotographers use nowadays to keep their images sharp.
I really learned something. Chris, did you have any idea that's how that worked? I thought it was, just like, okay, we're going to set the longitude, the latitude, and maybe some Keplerian elements or some such, and just let a motor go and correct the telescope as we go. But you're actually looking at, have another small telescope that's looking at a guide star and using that to keep the other telescope going. Chris, did you know this?
I know about it as I've done photography since a kid, read about all the different things, and one of the fascinations I had in my youth and still do today has been radio telescopes and the optical scopes like Paul's talking about. And yes, I have read about that and thought that was pretty wild. And many occasions watching many sci-fi or movies, and you watch the parts where they look at the skies and the stars, and you look, I'm like, oh, I know what that scope's doing. I know what that telescope's doing. That's pretty cool. But yeah, it's fascinating. It's I could spend a week doing that. Like, I could go off the grid and just spend a week doing that kind of stuff and, like, come back and go, oh, it's a month later. How about that?
It's a month later. Well, Paul, I really learned – go ahead, Chris. I'm sorry.
I just – when I – a friend of mine, I go up to see him up in the Catskills, and I get the chance to go in the woods, 12,000 acres of woods that I have access to, and I start taking pictures. And I start in the morning, get some great stuff, the wildest-looking things like skinks. What's a skink? It's an amphibian little lizard that lives under the rocks. I had no idea until I moved one. I'm like, skink. Okay. And then I look at the time like, wow, it's 2:00. I started out at 6:00. and not even loss of energy because that's how much I love it. So, that stuff is great. Paul's images are excellent. And the stacking I've learned about and tried it a couple of times. That takes some patience.
It does. I mean, if it was easy to do, everybody would be doing it, right?
Yeah. Hey, Suncast, let's look at that next picture with that rod in the middle of the picture, and we'll jump to that. But again, Paul, thank you again for teaching me about the guide telescope, looking at the guide star. That's amazing technology. I had no idea. All right, what are we looking at here?
I had to send this to you because we're doing a job up on Farnsworth Peak in Salt Lake City, Utah. And the gentleman from that facility shared this picture with me yesterday. This is a lightning rod. And I know we probably can't zoom in on it, but if you look at it, we can. That's great. Thank you. See all those pits? Those are all direct lightning hits, proving that lightning rods really work. And I was just amazed to see this thing. It looks like it's diseased, but all these things are lightning hits, and proving that it's really attracting the lightning and it's taking it down to the ground like it should. I don't know what period of time this is over, but I was astounded to see this thing speckled like that with pits.
Well, you'd rather have that than see those pits on your expensive ERI or Shively or Jampro antenna or PSI. You'd rather see it on the lightning rod.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So did we have some more pictures, or are we about out? So Suncast, what's left? Anything? Anything? Ah.
Yes. A friend of mine sent this to me, and it just sums up my feeling about the night sky. Dark, you're my best friend. I don't know why so many people are afraid of you. And yeah, if you can show the whole thing, it shows a guy with a telescope drinking a cup of coffee and just taking it all in. My son Jesse is out in Flagstaff, Arizona. I don't know where he got this from, but every clear night he is out with his digital SLR camera taking incredible pictures of the Milky Way. And I'm so proud of him for doing that. But he's got a really great environment to do that in as well. You know, in the middle of the desert. Flagstaff is a really cool city because they have an ordinance where they don't allow much light pollution at all. Every fixture in the city is pointing the light right down to the parking lot, so it's not scattering. And they have an observatory up there called the Lowell Observatory on Mars Hill. And you can go up there at night and you look out over the city and it's eerily dark. You can see the Milky Way, and it doesn't look like many other cities you've seen in the country because they protect the night sky. And it's a great place to be. If you ever get a chance to visit Flagstaff, I highly recommend it. But it's a lot of fun. So, yeah, I just wanted to throw that in there as my feeling about darkness. Darkness can be a good thing, too. We're losing our ability to enjoy the beautiful night sky because of, the creeping out of all the suburban areas. And it's nice that some governments and regulations are in place now to help protect that, so you don't have to drive quite as far all the time.
Yeah. Last year, my family was on vacation in Southern Virginia at some little resort, and I noticed that it was really, really dark outside. My son and I had to go to a store and get something, I don't know, some antifreeze or something for the car. Anyway, on the way back, and I was, boy, it's really dark out here. Why don't I stop? So he stopped, and sure enough, I got my son out of the car, said, Michael, let's just let our eyes adjust. And sure enough, after a few minutes, I said, look, see that across the sky? That's the Milky Way. And so we found some stars, and that's so cool. There's transmitter sites like that too. You go turn out the lights. Well, call the FAA first, but turn out the lights. And you can see a lot. Hey, we got to take a quick break, and then when we come back, a final word about drones. I think Paul has something else to show us here. It's Kirk Harnack along with Chris Tobin and Paul Schulens on This Week in Radio Tech, and we're going to hear from our friends at Inovonics. Let's check this out.
The Aran 655 is the latest addition to the Inovonics family of rebroadcast receivers. Designed specifically for FM broadcast translators, also referred to as relay transmitters. The Aran 655 is unique as an uncompromising DSP-based HD radio and FM receiver combined with a powerful 3-band audio processor and dynamic RDS encoder. IP connectivity adds streaming capabilities, and a web browser interface gives you total remote control of the unit from any PC or mobile device. The Aran 655 gives you maximum flexibility for program sources. Select program audio from analog FM, digital channels HD 1 through 8, streaming sources, and analog or AES digital line inputs, all with assignable failover audio backup. The internal RDS encoder allows you to customize your RDS messaging. You can use incoming off-air RDS data, convert HD radio pad data to RDS, convert streamed metadata to RDS, or receive IP telnet data. Comprehensive audio processing includes gated and windowed AGC, a unique syllabic leveler, 3 bands of compression, and both wideband and independent HF limiting. Easy setup is achieved by using 10 factory presets and 10 customizable presets. The processor also supports day parting, allowing automatic preset changes to follow different programming formats throughout your broadcast day. The front panel has an OLED display and jog wheel with intuitive menus for easy setup, advanced control, and editing for all operating parameters. The Aran 655 dynamic web interface gives you total remote control of the unit, from any PC or mobile device. A comprehensive set of menus includes a quick overview of Now Playing info, input-output control, processor options, RDS encoder, alarms and notifications, SNMP settings, and much more. You can also listen to the live audio broadcast streamed through the web interface.
This is just an amazing, amazing product, and it's available from Broadcaster General Store. It's the Aaron 655 from Inovonix, and so many stations now have translators. This is a perfect way to feed your translator, and I think it's cool because no matter how you're feeding that translator, you can get the metadata, whether it's an IP stream or from an HD2 or HD3 transmission, or even feeding it separately over Telnet connection. You can get that metadata now onto your translator. So important. Since, you know, all new cars have RDS in them. So really cool. It's the Aaron 655. Call our friends at Broadcasters General Store. The website is bgs.cc, bgs.cc, or call them at 352-622-7700. And I appreciate it if you'd let them know that you heard about it here on This Week in Radio Tech. All right, just a couple of minutes remaining with Paul Schulens and Chris Tobin here. Paul, I was just delighted I got to fly my drone for a few minutes yesterday evening before the sun went down. But you've got something cool to show. So you're a drone pilot, take some pretty pictures, and you've got a neat accessory. Ah, look at that. I think your mic may be muted. Oh, there you go.
Oh, there we go. This is pretty cool. Newest toy. You got to get one of these, Kirk. Dual 4K. If I pointed out, there's two lenses in there, and they're 4K video displays of real-time data from your drone. The drone transmission goes direct to these goggles, which is kind of cool. Yeah. You don't even need the phone. And for a photography tool, it's fantastic because you're flying this thing along and you can exactly frame, even in, you know, bright daylight with glare and all that, you can see exactly what you're looking for. And really, you feel like you're up there in the air with the drone. It's a lot of fun. You need another person, right? You need a spotter when you use one of these things. So it adds a little complexity, but for photography, I think it's great. A lot of fun. Drones are so cool. I mean, I'm glad we talk about these things, and you and I exchange drone pictures all the time. It's great for tower inspections, and you know, now with forward looking infrared, we can do all kinds of neat things like look for hot spots and transmission lines, and you know, even measure RF fields, close in RF fields with a drone that used to cost thousands of dollars to do with a helicopter. So all kinds of great things for broadcasting coming up with drones. And I'm glad so many of us share the hobby. It's a lot of fun, and we hope the regulations allow us to continue to do a lot of great things for broadcasting with it.
I agree. Chris Tobin, I wish I could fly my drone around New York City. There's a lot of laws about that. And there's some people who I can just live vicariously through looking over New York City, because there's a guy who flies his drone all over the city. I don't know how he gets away with it, but there's some pretty stuff on YouTube.
Yeah, there's, you hear the stories. We see a lot of it. Yep. There's a lot of folks doing stuff. The airspace over New York City is quite congested and regulated. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, as it should be. And hey, if you're a drone pilot, if you've got a drone, don't do stupid things. You know, do smart things. You know, don't endanger yourself or other people in any kind of way. That's just not smart. All right, hey guys, I wish we had more time, but we have got to go. Paul, in a few seconds, if you could, if folks want more information on remote control, what does Burke have as far as resources to get up to speed and see what's available and what might work in my situation?
Sure. I mean, they can call me anytime at Burke Technology. They can go to www.burke.com and look on our website. We have tech support, that's 8 a.m. to I think it's 5 p.m. Eastern time. It's free. It comes with all the products that we sell. And we're actually starting to do some training online, and check into our website or give us a call for more information on that. That's free training online for people that want to just find out more about how to take advantage of their Burke products. And I would encourage everybody to do that. I think these products are so capable, and I think such a high percentage of the customers that we have only use a very small percentage of the capabilities of these devices. So you're buying a lot of great stuff, and maybe you don't have the time to necessarily put into it, but I'd urge you to take a look at what the capabilities are, because you can really save yourself a lot of trouble if you're looking at things like transmitter efficiency and other things that are trending in the wrong direction, and get a head start on that kind of stuff. So that'd be my 2 cents worth in terms of what I'd love people to take advantage of with the stuff from Burke.
I'll put some links in the show notes, and unfortunately, we have got to go. And I would love to have you back to talk more about drones and astronomy. And, you know, maybe we'll talk about some radio stuff, too, during the show. Chris, hope you're well in New York City. And by the way, Chris, I'm going to see you in October for the AES and NAB. So I get to be up there, talk to David Bialik, our AES friend today. And apparently I'm moderating a panel, and maybe you could be on it.
Okay, I'll wait for that call or email. No problem. No problem with that.
Actually, Paul should probably be on it too. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. I was on a panel with you at AES a few years ago in the city, right?
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun. I'm going to be at IEEE, the Broadcast Technology Society, which I've been involved with for a number of years now, and I'm doing a little paper on remote control there as well. IEEE BTS is a great organization. I had to put my plug in for them. So if anybody wants more information on that, they can contact me at Burke, and I'd be happy to turn them on to the IEEE folks.
Is there a get-together of the BTS from IEEE this fall?
Yeah. The symposium is coming up in October. I believe it's the 9th through the 11th, and it's in Arlington, Virginia. It was last year, and really good stuff there too. So if you can make it down there, great. I know Telos is an ongoing sponsor, and so is Burke Technology.
I'll find that and stick a note in the show notes as well. We got to go. Thank you so much, Paul Schulins. The hour just flies by way too fast. We got to have you on before another 300 and some episodes goes by. Okay.
No, thank you very much. Great to talk to you, Chris, as well. And I appreciate the opportunity to be on, and look forward to the next one, Kirk.
All right. And Chris Tobin, appreciate you being on from Newark, New Jersey. Thank you for joining us again this week and almost every week. Appreciate it.
No problem. I'd be remiss if I didn't say Jolly Toner. It's CCBE is the conference that I was referencing. I meant to say that earlier, up in Toronto.
Yes.
Also.
Yeah. That's right. And that is way up north a bit. Or north of us,
it's
anyway.
Great place to go. It's a great weekend. Hey.
Thanks a lot to all of our sponsors, which include Lavo at lavo.com/twert. Also, the Telos Alliance at the Omnia Volt Audio Processor. And also, Broadcasters General Store at bgs.cc with lots of great products like the Inovonics Aran 655. All right, we got to run. Thanks to Suncast for producing today's show, and to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network, home of lots of other fine podcasts. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.